the OTB Podcast Network.
Graham Hunter is with us. Graham, good morning to you. How are you?
Good.
What a brilliant end to the La Liga season where, I don't know, I'd say 2 weeks ago, I was assuming that Barcelona were just going to win out because that's what happens, and they were going to win the league, and that has not happened. And as a result, right now, today, it looks like Atleti are on the verge of winning. Is this what might end up being Diego Simeone's greatest achievement?
I wish I could resoundingly jump onto that bandwagon. It will be a giant achievement, given that should they win it, two games left, both winnable. It will be the third title in nearly half a century. So it marks it down as something extremely special. There have been times when in the run-in they look like mid-table. They look as if they've frozen in the headlights. It's not simply the fact that, like most of Spain's leading teams, they've been battered by injuries and COVID absences, probably more COVID absences and difficulties in Atleti's squad than any other. The place where their training ground is, Maja de Honda, just about 20 minutes outside Madrid, has been a real hotspot for the virus. More than that, though, I really want to point out that they turned the year, having made a record half season, looking really resourceful and powerful, and having established a gap that made them, in my own words, champions elect. Boy, I've been chewing my nails on that one. But when it came to the Madrid derby, where they played really well in a patch of several games where they looked horrible, they looked I can shortcut this. Anybody who watched either of the games against Chelsea will have a bit of an idea how they were playing domestically. They just looked like shells, automatons. And they raised the game against Madrid, played really fabulous football, confident, pressing, sliding the ball through transitions. Trippier, just back from his ban, was outstanding. And then they lost a goal, when they were about to score 2-0. They didn't. It went straight up the other end. Benzema scored, and all the wind was knocked out of their esophagus. They looked lost. So for you to say now that, they've got this points lead, last night they played really, really well in a fabulously entertaining game against Real Sociedad. That it's now back in their hands completely, with Madrid going to Granada tonight to try and cut the gap, is a big achievement. I just wish that there had been a steady hand all throughout. Diego Simeone, Gerard, has looked like somebody who's a fearful champion. And I don't know how often we use that adjective about champions. I think rarely. I don't remember saying or writing it in my career, in that often when they go up in a game, he'll retrench, even though when he's got Suarez at his age and athleticism, you can't ask him to burst beyond, you can't ask him to be playing on the shoulder of the last defender with 40 metres thrown. You can't. And yet they will entrench themselves in their own penalty box and consistently be picked off. It's looked, a tactical mess sometimes with the 3-5-2 that was really useful for Suarez in the first half of the season. When he was absent, they continued playing it. It made no sense. I really wish I could laud Cholo Simeone and say this has been a title with panache, a season that you want to admire. If you're an Atleti fan, fair enough. I hope you're throwing rotten eggs at the screen right now, because a title's a title, a win's a win. I think it's our job independently to look from the outside and say, whoa, this might be a flawed, it might be beautiful to win, but it might have warts on it.
This is interesting, right? The psychology of a club who is trying to win a title against the powerhouses. I can see why you tie up. I can see why you get to the end and you start to have those concerns, because you don't have a squad festooned with players. I mean, obviously Suarez and there's a couple of others who are used to winning titles. Is there a possibility that this releases them, if they win this title, into something different? Or is the character emerging of Simeone, who is ultimately, if you scratch away at it, quite conservative?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it, Ger. I think that Look, I've written about this and I meant it, and therefore that's how I'm going to answer your question. There's been a Wengerization of Simeone. He arrived separated from his young kids, from his wife. He arrived ultra hungry. The embodiment, Simeone, the coach at that stage, was the embodiment of Simeone the player. And I think anybody who's lucky enough to have watched him knows exactly what that means. He came into a situation where they were mid-table and dropping and instantly won them the Europa League. And what we saw thereafter was a guy who split the tasks with Mono Burgos, his ex-goalkeeper colleague from Atleti when they won the double as players. And Mono Burgos was very much the tactical man, very much the guy who decided before games and during games how to strategize. And Cholo Simeone was the leader. He was the man manager, very much a manager in the old style that we used to know growing up, say, watching classic football in England. And that combination worked very well. But I don't simply mean that because Mauro Burgos has moved on now to coach the club that Leo Messi supported when he was a kid, and it was all boys, that things have changed. Mauro Burgos wanted to leave because he saw his partner changing. And that hungry, young, aggressive, totally focused guy on winning has become a guy now, happily for him, with a new younger wife, a new kid, a couple of seasons now, maybe three seasons under his belt of being the highest paid manager in the world, getting over 20 million euros, gross before tax, over 20 million euros a year, being chauffeur driven around sometimes in a Rolls Royce. The change to me in his personal circumstances can be reflected in the way that being competitive is good enough now, I think, for him compared to winning. I think that the way in which he's earned the club several hundred million by being competitive in the Champions League, but without winning it, without needing to pay out big bonuses. The club desperately needs the money. They want him to stay, therefore they've rewarded him, I mean, richly. If you look at every coach in the world, I don't think that your audience and Off the Ball AM would say, yeah, top two, top three, Diego Simeone. They wouldn't. He's top paid. But I think the edge is gone. I think there's a bluntness. I think that the club is really, really happy to be there or thereabouts because they desperately need the money. And while they keep spending on record signings to facilitate Simeone's squad, record signings would include Dom Slimar from Monaco, Joao Félix. Again, each of them has been pretty mixed in their results, and neither of them, although Lamar has been recuperated, neither of them has punched anywhere near the combined weight of 200 million that it cost to buy two players for Atleti. Extraordinary. So I think your latter take on it, Ger, about the fact that we are witnessing what Simeone has become in his team. Extremely conservative and more pragmatic, more percentage than he used to be. And as such, I think it troubles me because whether they win this title or not, I think that their struggles going forward will be a division between what players want to do, what players they want to go into fifth gear. They I'm certain that they don't want anarchy, they don't want to toss Simeone out, but there's a breach. And if you have a breach between a group of players and a coach, it isn't always fatal, but if it's left that way, it can become so. So I'm sorry to sound a little bit pessimistic because this title race has been absolutely extraordinary. What we're talking about was fueled by Barcelona playing really well in patches against Levante, and then in the last 4 or 5 minutes, seeding a 3-3 draw. And, you know, we've watched Barcelona toss things away, particularly recently against losing a home to Granada, drawing with Atleti. And that has allowed Atleti back in. Real Madrid are absolutely, absolutely exhausted. They fought to a standstill with Sevilla at the weekend, 2-2 again. So we're seeing plenty of late drama, lots and lots of goals. Hero players hauling themselves through exhaustion. And that makes for pretty good, if not elite entertainment, pretty good entertainment.
So with Simeone, you're saying he's not one of the handful of best coaches in the world. Is he the best coach in Spain?
Again, you want to make that pound for pound argument. I don't know if you want to use some of the arguments you're using with Moran there. But if you set aside little bumps, for example, Lopetegui hasn't won the title this season, but he's about to give them a record points haul. He's going to keep them in contention for the title. He has kept them in contention for the title at Sevilla until today. They haven't won the title since 1946. They haven't been in contention in the last weeks of the title since Juan de Ramos was in charge. Julian Lopetegui has proven himself to be, particularly with a very good squad and a brilliant football director above him, he's in a cozy spine of a club that has made him look fantastic. Tonight's opponents for Real Madrid, Granada, if you look at them, in historic last season, first season wonders is not something that's completely unknown. But to get to Europe for Granada's first ever time in their history last season by thrashing Athletic Bilbao 4-0 on the last day, to compete really well in Europe and go far, and I think make Manchester United work reasonably hard, and then to be deeply, soundly safe early on in La Liga with the injuries they've had. Diego Martinez at Granada, you could begin to argue, well, no, it's Unai Emery on... comes into Villarreal first season. Here he is in their first UEFA final after this is their fifth attempt. There are candidates, and I've noticeably left out Zidane and Marcelino. If you really nailed me to it, and Koeman isn't a competitor for him, if you really put me on the spot, I would say that Marcelino is the outright best coach in Spain. And Diego Simeone, if you set aside his previous achievements and the allure of a man, because he carries a great image, he carries a great impact, he's extremely iconic, and I don't say that lightly. If you look at him now and say, is he the best coach in Spain, I'd say no. And I would say he might have to get in a queue of three or four.
Who bottled this more, Graham, between Barcelona and Real Madrid?
No, well, Real Madrid are still in it. Whereas I think that, you know, I had Real Sociedad drawn last night and they came damn close. Then Barcelona might still be just about in it. Koeman is the answer. Because Koeman has become much more worried about whether he's going to keep his job than he should have done. Throughout the last 7 or 8 weeks, he's become aware that having turned things around, having put together a points total, which I must admit seemed close to unfeasible given what he took over, having won the cup, Koeman patently thought that the extra year that is on his contract would be his to complete. Laporta has conspicuously avoided confirming that. The opportunity was when things between Koeman and Messi were pretty good, by the way, asterisk. I know factually that Messi doesn't think Koeman is the man, tactically, that he's got the right coaching credentials to take them forward over the next couple of years to win the Champions League. Messi doubts that. They have got on well. Messi undoubtedly respects what he's seen Koeman doing around the rest of the squad, the way in which the team is playing more robust, more interesting, more attractive football. And Messi's had a good season under Koeman. An astonishing season, if you think about what mood he was in last August. But nonetheless, it's known within the club that Messi's unsure that Koeman's the man going forward. Koeman, over the last 7, 8 weeks, has been thinking, this is all about how do I win the league so I keep my job, not like what does each situation require. And if you look at the way he's prepared for certain games, the tactics he's used in certain games, and his in-game management, then he's come up deficient. And it pains me to say it, because you'd like to be able to say that a man who can take the diminished resources, the fractious resources that he inherited at the beginning of the season, and make them competitive domestically for this long, and until the last 3-4 games, probably, as Gerard said at the top, on the one that everybody expected would fulfil the games by winning and win the title. To lose his grip on that and to make decisions in matches which literally baffle you. And the last one against Levante was a dog's breakfast. It feels to me as if he's got in a muddle about the big thing here is I'm at my dream club. I've wanted this job for nearly 20 years. And remember, he nearly got this job ahead of Frank Rijkaard in 2003, but Ajax wouldn't let him go and Barca couldn't pay the buyout clause in Koeman's coaching contract. So I think it's a natural human instinct to go, I no way am I losing this. I have to cling on. I think he's lost focus on what was in front of him and therefore lost the means to win this title. And given that Zidane and Real Madrid are still more or less in it and have the head-to-head record over Atleti, so should they finish equal on points, Real Madrid win the title, I'm not calling Zidane out yet as having lost this league or chucked it away, but Koeman comes out of this not smelling of roses on.
Graham, there's loads of other little bits and pieces that we just wanted to kind of try and tie all the disparate strands together. It's been, I mean, the papers had it 3 weeks ago that the Premier League deal was going to be a replica for the next 3 years of the existing deal, which means that Sky, BT and Amazon have it. It's now been confirmed this morning by the Premier League that is in fact the case. So they're not losing any of the $4.5 billion for the domestic rights. And obviously they make the same amount in their international rights, which means they'll continue to be a powerhouse over the next while. And probably from the English club's perspectives, it will be at least that deal and maybe the next deal after that before the Super League clubs revisit the plans for the Super League. In the meantime, UEFA feel emboldened a little bit because of the response that they've had, and so they feel like now's the retribution tour, and the retribution is focused on the big clubs in Spain and Juventus as well. So with all that going on, does a title win for Atleti suddenly mean that we might have a situation where Atleti become the main club in Spain for the next couple of years if they're not getting punished by UEFA, if UEFA do follow through with punishment for Barcelona and Real Madrid? I mean, I suppose the real question is, does anybody actually think Barcelona and Real Madrid might not be playing Champions League football as some form of punishment for persisting with the Super League dream?
Wow, it's a coup and buster of a question. Let me go multiple choice. One, what Sheffield is doing is merited. He has allowed the recalcitrant clubs to come back in without punishment. You can argue all you want about that, but I think he was in a position whereby he had to say to them, there's a way back, because there was fear at UEFA. I know that there was fear and confusion about what had happened, as well as a sense of betrayal. The instant he found out that there were deserters and that the large majority of the breakaway clubs in the European half-wit league wanted back into the fold again because they were scared outside in the cold. It's been a glorious episode, hasn't it? I think he had to welcome them back in. Those are the stick-outs. Well, if you don't punish them, those who've come back in will be going, well, and those who never weren't invited or who wouldn't breach, they're looking and going, well, what's okay, just do it yourself. So, listen, it stands to evidence that Sheffield is doing the right thing. It's an investigation, so let's see what they come up with. I think they're checking out their legal rights. If the three clubs that you mentioned, who are Barcelona, Real Madrid and Juventus, refuse to renege on the Super League and don't get themselves back in line, they will merit being expelled, suspended, in my view. At which point, I understand your argument about Atleti, but you have to pose the idea that if you cut out all the fighting and the tumult and the legal actions and you cut to a chase whereby, in your hypotheses, there's no Real Madrid or Barcelona in the Champions League and they lose that enormous, enormous revenue. You're talking about, for both of them, you're averaging now about in the region of 90 million a season. That's a lot to lose in the current pandemic. It's a horrendous prospect for them. Do they suddenly become non-competitive domestically, Jared? They become non-competitive in the transfer market. The knock-on effect in whatever European football they're playing over the following 3, 4, 5 years, that becomes absolutely gigantic. But does it mean that they aren't they're 8 stone weaklings for Atleti to push around domestically? I don't think so. What might be interesting would be, like, if this scenario were to come to, let's call it the Gerrard scenario, right? And I'm going to phone Sheffield and ask him to use that phrase now. if the Gerrard scenario comes to pass, then what we would obviously regularly be seeing would be Villarreal, Real Sociedad, Sevilla, pick your club, maybe Athletic, maybe Betis, playing Champions League football. And should they do reasonably well, last 16 quarters, you're talking about 75, 80 million. Suddenly their robustness in terms of retaining good players, number one, not buying, but retaining good players, and then investing in the market becomes different. And maybe La Liga becomes, you know, a six-horse race all of a sudden. It's an interesting prospect. For the good of Barcelona and Real Madrid, I hope that they wake up, smell the coffee, and work out that the coffee's about to burn their nose. They acted wrongly. They've been made to look incompetent. It's been a clown circus. They've lied. They've breached competences too. And one of the worst things for me is that they took no account. Never mind, fans are sadly used to not, you know, and Laporta has promised the voice of the fans at Barcelona will dictate everything, but there's been no move whatsoever to try and ask the fans to vote on what they think. There's been, you know, nothing's happened on that. So that's just a, you know, a nice rose water smell and a hanky to cover a turd. The thing that angers me is that the players may be beautifully recompensed, but we are taking players and squeezing the living daylights out of them. That's why I use some of the terminology I did about the way in which this league is coming to a culmination in Spain. We're seeing elite footballers who can't put one foot in front of the other without injuring themselves, who mentally, creatively are exhausted. We're in a period of, never mind the quality, feel the width. And I like quality. And also, I hate your job, my job, Owen's job. We get to meet these people. We get to know them. They're real human beings. They're not just commodities to be tossed around, yet they are being repeatedly treated like commodities. Nobody asked them about the Super League. Nobody, they all just went, Alison, I'll buy them off with an extra 10 million in wages a year each. And, well, fine, but I hope that bounces back on all of them and slaps them right in their stupid faces.
Graham, great stuff as ever. Thanks a million. Cheers. Graham Hunter giving us his thoughts there. If you want to get in touch, 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. It is 12 minutes past 8 this morning. Packed show still to come.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.